Welcome to Recalculating America, a program dedicated to small business in America. Recalculating will help you, the American small business owner, build a new business or help you to grow your existing one. Each week, experts will give you useful information about starting your new business, and you will hear from professionals selected to help you grow your business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest and has many years of experience helping small businesses build and grow their businesses. Now he is sharing his ideas with you over the air. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do. Now, your host, Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Good evening. This is Dan Perkins, and I'm your co-host along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating, a program dedicated to helping small business leaders increase their profits. We draw our name from the best-selling book, which features the contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all of whom offer ways to grow your small business profitably. Don?
Well, Dan, I'm having a good time. I'm on vacation and having a good time about it. But this show, in particular today, is of very great interest to me because we have a very unusual guest. Do you want to talk about her?
Yeah, we have Amanda Snyder, who we just had a few moments to talk to about her unique business. And so I understand SCORE recognized you as a small business for the state of Arizona. So, Amanda, tell us a little bit about yourself, the SCORE award, and then most important, tell us about your unique business.
Sounds good. It's actually the state of Nevada is where we're located.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
That's okay. My name is Amanda Snyder. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm 26 years old. I just opened the first and only private drug detection company in the state of Nevada. So pretty much what we do is we use trained canines, almost like a police dog, and we originally started this for worried family members. If you think your loved one is doing drugs, you don't want law enforcement involved, we could come in when your loved one is, say, not home. We could search the home. If we find anything, you get to decide at that point what actions you want to take. You dispose of the drugs, and it's all confidential, discreet, you know. We come in unmarked cars. The neighbors don't know about it. And it's just very private. And our dogs are able to alert on five major street drugs: marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, and MDMA.
So let me interrupt you because I'm fascinated. I'm assuming that all of the drugs that you just mentioned that you can find are controlled substance and are illegal, at least on a federal level.
Correct.
So when you go in and you spot the drugs and you leave it up to the individuals to decide what to do, do they have to tell you what they did with the drugs?
No, they do not. We actually, when our dog alerts on something in somebody's home, we kind of just mark the area, and it's up to the homeowner at that point to go through that area and find what our dog alerted on. They can choose to do that while we're there, or if they'd like to handle it themselves when we're gone, they also have the choice to do that.
Can your dogs detect the use of the drug by a human?
What do you mean by that?
If somebody's on cocaine or heroin or marijuana, can the dogs who are sniffing to try and find the controlled substance, can they tell whether somebody is using it or not?
You know, we haven't experimented with that. I'm sure they could, but we don't search people. So we haven't ever done training on them, you know, kind of detecting a person. Just,
right.
I mean, they'll alert on very small amounts. I mean, they can alert, our dog can alert on something. If, say, you were smoking marijuana and your T-shirt is now in your hamper, our dog could alert on that and up to days later. So it's kind of, it's really cool, but kind of crazy how smart they are.
Do you need a special license from the state of Nevada to do this work?
Yes. We actually, it took us about 9 months just to get our private investigator's license, which the state of Nevada did require for us to start the business, because they had to do a huge background check, obviously, on me. And then they also had to put us through a test with our local police department, and they had to test the dog to make sure that the dog could properly find all drugs.
Wow. So you're a private, in essence, a private detective agency, and your detective has four legs and a great nose.
Correct.
How long does it take to train a dog to be a detective?
We actually got our dog, Nick, already trained. I'm actually working, we have two German Shepherds. One is Jax and one is Nick. Nick, we got fully trained by a professional trainer in Tennessee who trains police dogs. And we're working on Jax now myself. It's a bit tough. I thought it would be a little easier. So I'm not sure how long it takes yet, but I'll find out once he's trained.
If you're buying you bought the one dog already trained from a place in Tennessee.
Correct.
What did it cost
yes,
to
did.
Acquire a trained dog?
It cost, after travel and I had to stay out there for a while for training, it cost about $10,000 for our dog.
Wow.
Nick. Yeah.
So
it's a little pricey.
What do you think is the opportunity for your business going forward?
You know, I really want to reach the residential side of the business. I want to help worried family members, because I was once in a really bad position to where this business could have helped me. And I really want to expand there. Commercial seems to be more popular right now. That's just because nobody really knows it exists. It's never existed before, so it's been a little tough for the residential side to find us and to kind of go to them. But I'd really like to hit that market a little harder because, again, I really want to help people who are in the same shoes that I once was.
You know, Amanda, I'm a registered investment advisor under the Securities and Exchange Commission, and I have very tough regulations of what I can do and say and what I can't say. And advertising is one of the most difficult things to get approved. Have you started any advertising? And I'm not sure how you promote it, but have you started any advertising for your business?
You know, we are testing out the Facebook and the social media advertising right now. It hasn't been a big hit yet, but we just got started with it, so I'm not really sure how that's going to play out yet. Cold calling has pretty much been the best bet for commercial, you know, just calling other companies, rehab facilities, you know, the clubs here in Las Vegas, introducing myself, telling them what we do and how we can help them. That's pretty much been the best way we've advertised so far, you know, but we're always looking for new ways to market and advertise.
So you started this business from scratch.
Correct.
What were you doing before you did this?
I was in payroll and HR for a community management company for almost 7 years before this.
Wow. Well, how do you go from that to drug sniffing dogs?
Well, there is a story behind it. I'll try and make it a little quick. I was previously in a 4-year relationship with somebody who had a drug addiction that I never knew about. And about 2 years into our relationship, you know, the signs were all there, but I was very young. I wasn't really sure the side effects of drugs. I have never done drugs. So it was just very new to me. So, but eventually it got so bad to the point where I knew something was wrong. So, you know, when he would be at work, I would search through the entire house, try to find any evidence that I could, because I asked him all the time, but, you know, they don't want to just say, yeah, you're right, I'm using drugs every day, you know. It's not something you're proud to admit.
Mm-hmm.
So I searched, I mean, I'm telling you, every day for years. And it was one day when I was in the garage, and I opened up a box that was on the top shelf of our garage, and it was one of those inflatable pumps to blow up one of those like air mattresses. And inside of the box, inside of the air pump, there was meth. And I guess it was at that point where, like, I felt not so crazy anymore because I knew something was wrong. And in that moment, I remember thinking, wow, if I just had a dog or like a dog that was trained, you know, he could smell that. I would have never found this if I wasn't going through the garage. And it took me, you know, years to find it and finally get the truth. And now that I have my dog, Nick, he could find that in minutes. And it's crazy to think that, like, there. And I remember just thinking in that moment that there's no way I'm the only person in Las Vegas going through this. And
yeah.
It was then that I was like, I could help people. I could help myself, and I could help other people. And so it kind of, I mean, it took me 5 years to finally actually take the plunge and start it because I was scared, but I did it, and here I am, and now I help people who are in my who were once in my shoes, and it's a really good feeling.
How much do you think you spent starting your business?
Ooh. I want to say
scary,
about,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's very scary. I want to say roughly $25,000 between everything. I also quit my job to start this full time because I knew if I was busy doing something else, I wouldn't put 100% into this. So,
right.
But startup costs about $25,000. That's without, you know, me making money, obviously. So
$25,000 includes the cost of the dog.
Correct. Uh huh.
Okay.
That's all the licensing, all the travel, all the training I had to take for the dog. And
do you know of any other people in your community that do what you do?
I don't actually. You know, before I started it, when I kind of had the idea, I Googled it, and I'm like, I can't be the only one who has thought of this. And found, you know, there are companies around the United States who also do this, but I have yet to find one in Las Vegas or Nevada. I've tried Googling a million times, but I just haven't found anybody here.
Hmm. I assume that your dog can tell if a person has one of the four or five controlled substances you talk about on their person.
Oh, correct. Yes, absolutely.
So are there laws in the state of Nevada about bringing controlled substance drugs into the workplace?
Yeah, a lot of companies have a drug-free workplace. We cannot search a person. We can't search a person. We can search offices and things in the office. But as far as actually searching somebody or like the clothes they're wearing, we by law we can't do.
And why do you think that is?
You know, I couldn't give you an exact answer, but we did a lot of research and we did a lot of asking the state for questions, and because again, since we were the first ones, we weren't sure on the legalities of it. So we talked to the state, we talked to the private investigators board, and it's funny because every time we would talk to someone, they would say, I have to get back to you. I have no idea because we've never heard of this before. And I'm like, well, I want to do it. So I have a nice little file tucked away upstairs with everything written down that we've had to ask. And it's just crazy.
Does the Las Vegas police force have these dogs?
Yes, they do. I believe our police department has 9 dogs total. narcotic dogs.
I'm sorry, did you say 9 dogs?
Yes, uh-huh.
And do you know what they use them for?
Well, they use them a lot in schools and, you know, traffic stops and homes, you know, when they get warrants and that sort of thing. We're trying our hardest to get into our public schools. We're not trying to kick them out, but we're trying to get in there too. I just think it's really important for drug dogs to show a presence in our schools, because it doesn't happen as often as I feel it should. I was in high school. I feel like it wasn't that long ago, but I never did drugs, but I could have told you, you know, a ton of people who did. And I don't think that's safe. And we really want to show a presence there and keep drugs out of the schools, keep the students safe, you know, and hopefully stop drugs from being introduced to people. You know, a lot of people try drugs in their school years, and I think if we can kind of stop that, it could, you know, potentially stop a lot of people from going down that road.
So if you take your dog down the center of a hallway where there's metal lockers, student lockers, mm-hmm. on each side of the wall, can your dog identify the drugs through the metal doors?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we wouldn't walk towards the center. We would actually have him search, you know, one side at a time. But, I mean, it's amazing to watch. If he passes an odor of one of the drugs, he will just stop and he will just go right back to it. And, you know, it's really cool to see.
Do the public schools in Nevada have a drug-free policy?
Yes, they do.
So you have the potential to provide an important service to make sure that the public schools are drug-free.
Yeah, correct. So as I said, right now they do use the police department, but to my understanding, they use the police department only as requested. So what I was trying to pitch to them is we want to be there regularly. We want to be there not only to keep, you know, we want to be there as a deterrent. You know, the students see a drug dog walking around campus. It's not necessarily because your school is full of drugs, but we want to, you know, kind of put that scare tactic into them. We want them to not bring them to school in the first place. So we really feel that we could help them be more present at school.
So the reason the police would be in there would be for a very specific thing. They don't do regular searches.
Yeah, to my understanding, if the principal is kind of thinks something's going on, or he, you know, there's rumor of drugs being in school, they can then request a search from our police department. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I just was curious. Do you have a sense of how busy the 9 dogs are in the Las Vegas Police Department?
You know, I don't actually. I know a couple of the canine handlers on the team, but I don't know exactly how busy they are. I do know, after talking to one, though, that, for example, when a school requests the services, it's not something they could just go do, you know, that day, because obviously they are very busy. There's not many dogs for as big of a town as we have.
Sure.
So it's just, it's a little different than maybe a private agency like us, where we could set like a schedule where we're there regularly mandatory and, you know, we're always.
What
present.
Do you charge for your service?
An average search charge is about $250. It kind of depends on how long we're there and the square footage. So it does vary, but it's usually around $250.
And at $250 per search, have you figured out what your break-even number is? How many searches?
We haven't yet. We're still kind of testing the market. Like I said, we've had more commercial, so obviously those have been much bigger jobs. So we haven't really discovered a standard price yet. We're kind of testing the market.
When you say commercial, Amanda, can you help us understand what you mean by that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So we work with a lot of the clubs here, casinos, private schools. Right now, private schools, because they don't have the police department like public schools do. So
right.
That kind of thing is what I'm referring to for
okay.
commercial.
Don,
thanks.
Can
I, Amanda, how do people
yeah.
find you?
You know,
your company.
That's one of our biggest struggles right now is they don't. Because it's never existed before, nobody knows to look for it. So right now, it's pretty much we have to go to them. So we've had a couple articles written about us, which has been great for people to, you know, kind of be familiar with the business and learn about it. We've gotten a lot of business that way from the media. But other than that, you know, like I said, we cold call a lot of businesses and casinos and private schools, and that's pretty much seemed to be our best area to reach people. As far as residential, though, it's very hard to target them specifically because drugs don't discriminate. They're in every neighborhood, every family, and we haven't quite found what works yet to reach those people in need.
Well, let me ask you: if you find drugs, are you required by Nevada law to tell police about it? How do you get around that issue?
We are not required to inform law enforcement, and we don't find the drugs because we leave that up to the homeowner.
Yeah, you said you identify by markings to the homeowner where
Correct.
You believe they are. It's up
Correct.
To the homeowner to go and search the designated places. Going back
Absolutely.
To your question, Don, anything else?
Oh, yeah, I have two other ones. You won a SCORE award. I'm curious,
yeah.
what made you enter it, and why did they name you a champion?
You know, I entered it because I have actually been working with SCORE since I started my business. They offer free mentoring services. You can go as many times as you want. You can call them and bug them as many times as you want. And it's been a great resource for me. So they sent out an email about the contest, and I was like, oh, hey, you know, most unique business. I think mine's pretty unique. So I was like, why not try, you know, and enter? So I did, and, you know, they just released the winners a couple weeks ago, and I'm a winner for the state of Nevada. And in September, they'll actually pick top three, and top three will win $25,000 towards their business. So
wow.
That would be really awesome.
Dan, I don't know about you, but Amanda has one of the most unusual businesses that I've run across in a long time. What do you think?
Well, you know, Amanda, I've written several times. I write commentary, and I've written several times about the opioid epidemic, especially in the Midwest and up in New England, and even into Appalachia, where the use of drugs is and the overdoses is just out of control. And I was wondering, have you thought about in terms of who you're going to? There are drug intervention centers. There's an equal organization, I guess, to AA that helps family members and deal with drugs and drug abuse in the house. You know, if you believe it's there, but you can't find it, you may not be able to help the child. And maybe one of the areas you need to start thinking about is that at some of these rehab places where families are desperately trying to figure out what's going on with their child.
Right.
And you just said they're very good at hiding it. Maybe this is a place where you can act as also part of the intervention of discovering
right.
sources of drugs within the house, because it may be more than one place.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that, because we actually have helped the families who had they had a son or a daughter in rehab, and they just wanted to make sure that their home was free of drugs before their son or daughter returned home, because they don't want, you know, they don't want them to get home and then relapse, you know, because they have something stashed away in their room. And so we've actually helped quite a few families in that aspect.
Have you, and we're almost out of time. First of all, before I go any further, do you have a website?
Yes, we do.
Can you tell us what it is?
Yes, it's www.nosydogsdetection.com.
Okay, nosydogsdetection.com. Now, let me ask you my last question. Have you considered the possibility of speaking to civic groups like Rotary and Kiwanis and those types of organizations to help them understand what your service is, and the Chamber of Commerce looking for opportunities to bring in yourself and your dog and talk about what you do and how you can help families perhaps heal the terrible effect of drug abuse?
You know, I actually haven't, gotten into any of that yet. It's funny because somebody just called me from the Chamber of Commerce, I want to say last week, to talk about, you know, a membership there and, you know, the benefits of, you know, getting a membership with them. And I have yet to call them back, but
when you call them back, you ask them if you want me to join, I get a free presentation to the whole membership.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah. Tell them that's what you want to do.
That's what you asked for. Amanda, Dan, I'm going to jump in and ask you another question before we let her go. Our next guest is on the line, but I am absolutely fascinated by this, and ask, Amanda, are you licensed that you could take your dog to another state if someone was desperate enough and wanted you to come? Can you operate in another state?
Yes, we can. We actually haven't had anything out of state yet, but we have traveled to other cities within Nevada. So it is something that we are licensed and offer as well. So it's kind of good for other, you know, nearby cities and states that don't necessarily have these resources. We are able to travel to meet their needs.
Well, Amanda, you have a fascinating business. Congratulations on your
Thank
award.
Thank you so much.
And we'll put your website up on our show tonight. And thank you for coming and spending time and talking about your entrepreneurship and your new business. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And now we need to take a break, and we'll hear from our sponsor. And we'll be right back.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use Biscom's Secure File Transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BISCOM.com.
Dan, our next guest has been on the board, and I'd like to bring her in now. She's Jen Cohen Crompton, and we'll have your commentary at the end of the show. Is that okay?
That's fine. Not a problem.
Jen Cohen Crompton is entrepreneur in residence of the Need Company, and she's here to talk about neatness and spring cleaning and a lot of other things. Jen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
You going to come and clean my desk?
Yes, I will be right over.
Yeah, it needs some cleaning, that's for sure.
Welcome
to the show. Welcome to the show. Tell us about a little bit about yourself, how you became an entrepreneur and your business, and what's happening.
Sure. So my name is Jen Cohen Crompton, as you mentioned. I have owned my own small business for about, at this point, about 11 years. And I have two different businesses, and I've worked with Neat on some of their product development based off of what small business owners want and need to help run their businesses more smoothly. So working with Neat, I've just been able to give them an entrepreneur's perspective on, you know, what helps us on all the different levels of our business and how their software can integrate into our business management.
Currently, so excuse me for interrupting
ahead,
you. I couldn't hear whose software you're working with. I couldn't hear that.
Neat. So Neat is formerly well known as a hardware company with their scanners. So you might have heard of Neat Receipts back in the day. It was one of their first products that they rolled out. But they advanced to kind of go beyond the scanner and to go more toward the software, digital document management side of things.
All right. And so you work with them trying to develop applications that are appropriate and necessary for small business. Is that fair?
Yes.
So tell us about some of the things you've developed.
So one of the most important things that business owners really wanted was integrations with other software. So, you know, most of us are working on the cloud, and we have cloud-based applications, and sometimes it becomes daunting to pull data from one software application to another. So, simple example, if I'm using Neat software to snap photos of my receipts because I'm busy and I'm, you know, constantly on the road doing things as a small business owner, I might snap a picture of my receipt. I have it in my Neat application. It gets uploaded to the cloud. And then when I'm ready to run an expense report, I want that to be able to talk to my accounting system because I want my expenses to go back and forth. I don't really want to be manually entering anything or uploading. So there's an integration that we have that is with QuickBooks. So any business owner, you know, you have to have an accounting system. QuickBooks is a popular one.
Right.
And our data will go through an easy integration. All of your expense reporting and all of that data will go into QuickBooks. And that will kind of help you be able to streamline and manage all of your expenses and your financials without you having to download spreadsheets, upload spreadsheets, and that reduces your amount of error and then also the time that it takes to do all of that.
So you've been doing this, you said, 11 years?
I've been a small business owner for 11 years, yes.
How long have you been doing the Neat stuff?
I've been working with Neat for the past 3 years.
Okay. And what did you do before that?
Just running my business from a marketing standpoint. So my two businesses are I have a digital marketing company that I run, and then I also have a fitness studio. So I'm a little bit, different places, different times.
So let me ask you a question. As a person, as a small business person, and as a person working with probably other small business people, one of the things that we talk about and ask our guests about on this program is, what do you think is happening in the economy, and is it going to affect your business?
Yes. Okay, so I'll answer the first question. What I see happening in the economy, that is a big factor in, I think factors into almost every business, is the change of retail. So kind of the change of, you know, the experience of just buying something, or I should say the act of buying something versus the experience of buying something or doing something. So, you know, we know that big malls are suffering as some of their anchor stores are closing because they're shifting their dollars from their storefronts to their online marketing. And therefore, you know, we're experiencing this like kind of pullback in all the retail. So I think some of the experiences are what people are willing to spend their money on, not necessarily the products or going to the store because it becomes inconvenient. So, for our fitness studio, experience is key for us, and people come for an experience. And the experience is going to have to transcend beyond the in-store experience. So when they come and work out, they're going to also need some sort of experience that goes, you know, online. So what can we do to build a community online that we can continue to keep people engaged? And how does our business translate into an online sort of business? So, you know, all of these on-demand workouts, like the Peloton bikes that are in people's houses and they can stream workouts onto their screens, again, it's becoming that factor of convenience and then also not physically having to go somewhere if you don't want to. You can just do things when you feel like it. So I see that happening, and I see that businesses who are changing their models, so giving you different reasons to walk into their showrooms and their storefronts, those are the ones who are going to be successful. The ones who just kind of pull back and just abandon the storefront, you know, maybe that's going to work for them because they're just going to turn into an online retailer. But, you know, I guess we'll kind of see how those things go. But it's that shift in how people are spending their money and what they're willing to spend it on.
Yeah. There's an interesting development in New Jersey that I'm following at the moment. Macy's says they're closing 100 stores. We know there's problems with Sears and Kmart, Abercrombie and Finch, and lots of these mall-based businesses are not even migrating to the web. They're some of them are just plain going out of business. And I hear that there's a fairly large real estate developer in New Jersey who is either rethinking the malls that they own or looking to acquire these malls. And what they're doing is they're considering, like there's one apparently under rehab, in a multi-level mall, what they're doing is taking the second and third level and creating apartments, creating housing, and keeping the first level, reconfigure it into, you know, like a supermarket, maybe a shoe store, a drug store, so that some of the basic things can be done right in the center by going down the escalator and creating housing space, because their alternatives are tearing them down. And there are some, we hear, there are some that are tearing down, especially strip malls, and converting those into assisted living facilities. So there's a whole different dynamic going on in the retail space. And I think that it's going to present opportunity, but it's clearly going to change the way we live and our need. There are some people that think that, Jen, that the internet is keeping people in their houses and diminishing social reaction, and that because they're not leaving, they're not going anywhere, they're just staying. Do you find that some of the small businesses you work with that are home-based, that the entrepreneurs don't get out very much, they tend to try and stay and work their web-based business?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. So I think when we're looking at, you know, certain businesses, yes, I think, you know, some of them are stuck behind their computer screen. That's where they're going to be, and that's what they have to do. But I think that there are so many younger business owners who are, you know, running online shops. And in addition to running those online shops, they like running them from their computer and being online because it gives them the flexibility to move around. So, you know, I think there's two interesting things that you put in there. One about the apartment, right? So apartment living is becoming a little bit more popular with the younger generation because they don't want to plant roots. They don't want to plant solid roots. And if we, like, track this all the way back, it's going back to the fact that, you know, you don't get a job and hold it for 20, 30, 40 years and get a pension and, you know, just build your roots around where that commute is and call that your home for the rest of your life. Younger generations don't see that, and they don't want that. You know, they want to have a little bit more mobility. So they're going to places like apartments, and they're renting rather than buying. And therefore, you know, they have more flexibility when it comes to moving around. But that's more, you know, travel. They want to go to other states. They want to go to other countries. They want to go see things. And then they can run a business online because they can work from anywhere that has an internet connection. And I see a lot of young entrepreneurs, business owners who really just kind of want to have that lifestyle that they can be on the go and they can, you know, go explore and kind of see what's out there as opposed to just walking into a 9-to-5, driving back to their house, you know, paying their mortgage and just, you know, living about with their white picket fence and their 2.5 children or whatever. So, you know, I think that we're going to continue to see some of this trend, which, you know, I guess when you say, like, they're working behind their computers and they're becoming less social, I wouldn't say less social. I would just say social in a different way. because they're interacting with people online. They may be traveling again, you know. They may be going out to meetings, or they have to make an effort to be a little bit more social, but they're still doing it. You know, I don't think people are just going to disappear and become hermits for the rest of their lives. But that convenience factor plays into it, right? Because if you want to travel, you don't want to waste time food shopping. You'd rather the groceries come to you, or you'd rather walk downstairs in your apartment complex and go get your groceries. So it's just a shift in priorities and how and where you want to spend your time. And the fact that, you know, going to the mall isn't really an experience. It's you go in and out of stores and you touch and feel things. But you can do that more efficiently online and save time. And instead, your experience could be, you know, going for a weekend getaway. But I think that's kind of how the things are shifting and how we're changing our mindset.
Yeah, I have concerns about the clutter on the internet actually adversely affecting the opportunity for entrepreneurs to build viable businesses on the internet, because you can't break through all the noise that's there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I always think, you know, remember back in the day when social media just became fun and interesting and businesses started to join, and it gave all the small businesses the opportunity to, you know, be on the same level as the big businesses. But now that's not the case anymore, right? So Facebook used to allow you to create a page. Everyone had the same capabilities. You could look as big as small as you wanted to, but now it's a pay-to-play. So now for you to really get into people's feeds and to get some visibility, you have to pay more money. So again, the big corporations with lots of money are the winners. So I do see that being a bit of a struggle these days, but it depends on, you know, how you brand your business and how you decide to change and be different. Because I always think from a digital marketing standpoint, you know, digital is great. You have to be there. You have to do certain things because you have to be competitive. But when you're trying to be a little bit different, you're trying to stand out, you know, go for some traditional marketing methods and break off the internet, you know, send personalized invitations through direct mail. But I definitely see that kind of posing a threat. And, you know, even with Google searches and all the paid AdWords, and, you know, I kind of wish sometimes it was like early internet days when it was actually easy to find things. And now it's all sponsored and keyword saturated. But I think there'll be a tipping point where we kind of start to shift and something else pops up, and small businesses will be kind of put back on that even ground again.
Do you think it's possible that maybe that possible is not the right word. If you can look at yourself and your generation and what's going on, and look at what the proliferation, which we just talked about on the internet, do you see holes out there of services and needs that are unmet at the moment? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the growing opportunities is really that sharing economy. And that's not really a new concept, and it's not one that has huge holes in it, but there's still the opportunity where people don't always want to buy something new. They want to borrow, or they want to share. You know, we've kind of come to this, as I said, you know, younger generations don't want to necessarily own a home all the time. They want to maybe live in an apartment. Well, you know, you live in an apartment, you don't have that much space. And say you need a chainsaw and you need to cut something down. Maybe you don't want to buy one because you don't want to store it. But you may be able to borrow one from another person and rent their stuff and then give it back to them when you're finished. And for the individual, that's a way to make money off of something that's just sitting and not being used. So I think that we're going to continue to look for those opportunities of that sharing economy. And, you know, maybe that's another way that we're bringing people together as opposed to pulling them apart. But, you know, I see those opportunities that are sharing, and then also the convenience. So, again, you know, taking out some of those things that we do that we don't like doing, that could be simpler through technology or through, you know, making things quicker to us. So, you know, grocery deliveries. So rather than going to the grocery store, you go online, you shop. You can repeat your last purchase and your groceries show up at your doorstep. So I think those are some of the opportunities. You know, all of those services can be improved. They're all new and they're all still evolving. So I think there will be the opportunity for those to become even better, make things even more convenient, and continue to support that mobility and people just, you know, not having to basically choosing how they want to spend their time.
Right. You know, there's a group of people that call these people the millennials, who are, they call them urban dwellers, in a sense that they are moving to not necessarily to the biggest cities, but they're moving to more livable cities in proximity to the big cities, and are close to transportation, food, entertainment, and are trying to avoid owning an automobile. And I spoke to a gentleman recently who says that he sees the opportunity for sharing almost as if you were putting together a partnership to buy a car, and you had shares in it and you could use it a certain period of time, like a timeshare. It might be of interest to the millennials that there's a car in the garage that is a timeshare car that you can reserve for a certain period of time, and you don't have to worry about the ownership of the car. You have to share in the maintenance and insurance, but you're not buying the car. And you know, when you're talking about sharing the chainsaw, I mean, I guess I have a lot of stuff that I would love to be able to rent out to people. But Don, go ahead.
No, Jen, you originally came on this program to talk about spring cleaning. Let's go back to this. Dan and you have had a very interesting, but before we end the program, tell us a little bit what you mean by spring cleaning for a small business.
Yeah, so it kind of ties back in because it's about, you know, small business owners being on the go, being busy, and trying to do things as efficiently as possible, and doing that through technology. So when we talk to small business owners and we ask them, like, what are some of your business challenges and what are you trying to overcome, a lot of times they talk about the clutter, and that's like either the physical clutter, but now it's even more the digital clutter. So it's, my email box is completely full and I don't even know how to organize these emails. So some of the advice that we give them is, you know, about using different technology and different platforms that are going to help you sort through your emails. So something like Unroll.me is an easy way, and it's free, you know, that you can integrate your email box and it will go through and find all of your newsletter subscriptions and help you unsubscribe to all of them. So, you know, that's a lot of what takes up our inbox, but we don't always take the time to be like, okay, unsubscribe, or I don't even know how I got on this list. That's a program that will help you out. And then there's other programs that are going to help with other aspects of it, like your expense management. So kind of like I said, you know, what Neat does, it pulls your data into its system. It's able to parse through your data, and it can integrate with your other software. So it's going to integrate with your QuickBooks, and it's going to help you understand your financial situation and, you know, avoid all of that data, that manual data entry that you hate doing, don't feel like doing, takes up time, and feels like it just, you know, waste money because you're either doing it and spending your time on it or you're paying someone to do it. So, you know, that's another opportunity. And then when it comes to business data, you know, as small business owners, we want data, but we can only take so much and we can only understand so much. So using platforms that are going to help you understand the most important data for you. So for instance, if I am running Facebook ads, then I'm going to enable pixels on my website, and I'm going to be able to track who's coming from the social sites onto my to my website and then what they're doing, if they are converting into customers. You know, so we want to understand all of that biz data and not have to log into 10 different platforms and kind of just understand exactly how we want to do this. So in terms of, you know, spring cleaning for a small business, what it is it's saying, okay, what is taking up unnecessary time, what can I delegate? You know, is there other people I can delegate this to within my organization? If that's not the answer, then what can technology help me with? And it could be technology helps you streamline processes, it helps you with integrations, or it just enables some sort of automation and takes a lot of that manual process off your plate, and you can focus on other things that might be ways to bring revenue into your business and help you grow as a business. So this is a good time to kind of sit down and say, where do I need to make some changes? And then what can help me make these changes and, you know, clean up my business a little bit so I can free myself up to do bigger and better things.
Jen, your website, the Neat Company website, and how people can find you and the services?
Yeah, so neat.com is the website. And on that site, you can find our different products. So if you look under solutions, you'll find our software, our integrations, and all of the ways that you can use Neat. And then if you look under our resources tab, we also have a blog, which we try to post really great small business focused information about, you know, how you can run your business better from a marketing, operations, and finance standpoint.
Well, spell out
just to clarify. Just real quick, is it neat.com?
Yes.
Good, thank you.
So it's www.neat.com.
You got it.
Okay. This is radio. I want to make sure everybody heard it right. Jen, really, thank you very much for being with us today. I found you, what you and Dan were talking about, fascinating, and I'm sure our audience did as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thank you. And now we got a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Hate your old fax machine? You can now fax through email. Simply write an email, attach the document, and send. Works with all major email providers. Get rid of the noisy and expensive old fax machine and try Biscom's Cloud Fax. Our solutions are great for businesses of all sizes. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial. That's BISCOM.com.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
Well, Don, the ADP employment or jobs number came out this morning, and they need to work on their forecasting skills because they missed the number by 50%. They were expecting 185,000. Actually came in at 253,000 new jobs. I suspect that we're going to see the jobs number. We'll see the jobs number, I think, Friday from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I wouldn't be surprised if the number, because there was a huge disparity last month between the ADP number and the Department of Labor number, that the numbers aren't readjusted upward by the Department of Labor. 263,000 jobs, missing it by 50%. What's interesting is that the market is up this morning primarily because of the number. It was up over 160 points. It's only up 66 at the moment. And interest rates, the 10-year is up a little bit. Oil is up again. Oil may be on a tear here because we're really close to a significant resistance area that could take us to $54-$55 if we can break this. So we have jobs being created. I think in the ADP number, Don, I read that 49,000 jobs in the 263,000 were construction jobs. Again, not McDonald's minimum wage jobs. Bigger jobs. So the economy seems to be coming to life. And so even though it's coming to life, the Fed has indicated that they're not in any great hurry to raise interest rates. So money is still relatively cheap to borrow starting a business. And it appears that there is, as you said in the past, Mr. Trump has to get comfortable with governing. I think we're in a situation where he's going into the job. Now, there was a release this morning that Bannon has gone on the National Security Council. He's been taken off that position. And
about time.
And why do you say that, sir?
Anyway, I think he was more of a distraction than it was a help. And I think, as you just indicated, President Trump is learning to govern, and he's got to bring people in to his government that are experienced and that can deal with things. I thought it was a very good move on his part. Naturally, the media will put it in another light, but all in all, it's to me another sign that he's really learning to govern.
Well, you know, there's some. I'm not going to disagree with that. I wrote a piece that the Daily Caller snapped up like in a matter of 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm working on a piece right now that I suspect will be similar. The piece that I wrote on the Daily Caller, which I think appeared today, was on the stupidity of the Democratic Party and picking a fight over Gorsuch. And the fight has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with the Democrats desperately trying to retain some element of control. They don't seem to understand that to force McConnell to use the nuclear option, that Chuck Schumer, who was saying to McConnell, preserve the integrity of the Senate and get rid of your nominee. Don't use the nuclear option. Get rid of the nominee and get somebody else that's more acceptable to us. There's never going to be an acceptable conservative for the Supreme Court to Chuck Schumer. Not going to happen. But there are people who are now saying that really the justices of the Supreme Court is the only, currently, the only piece left that requires 60 votes to become law or approval. So if they get rid of that, if they get rid of the nuclear, they get the nuclear option, and everything then becomes a simple majority for everything, the Democrats lose a significant amount of power. And I don't think they understand what they were trying to do. They were so obsessed that and what's going to happen here is that Gorsuch is going to get through. They'll blow up the rules of the Senate, and it'll be a simple majority. And I think probably between now and the end of the first term, and surely the second term, probably Justice Kennedy and one other will either retire or pass on. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the oldest right now. So you could have a fundamental change in the court based on one vote, a simple majority. So I think the Democrats are in serious trouble. I don't think they understand how serious trouble they are. So we've got, what, about a minute?
Well, no, we've got enough time for you to say good night and for me to say good night, and for one last thought.
Okay, well, I think that we want to watch this next few days, what happens in the Senate. The Susan Rice situation is very concerning to me, and the possible political use of intelligence. Story's not dead. It's going to continue. So this is Dan Perkins.
And this is Don Mazzella.
And thanks for listening, and join us next Thursday night for Recalculating.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's show was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. please go to our website, recalculating.biz, for past shows and special offers. And until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.